and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
In other words, they charge us, we charge them, we charge them less. So how can anybody be upset?
President Trump's blanket 10% tariffs are now in effect. What that means for businesses and for you. And federal funding for libraries and museums are next up on the chopping block for the Trump administration. A look at the local impact. And now to some of today's top stories. Chicago police say a 36-year-old man was, quote, hunting for victims when he found and sexually assaulted five women over 3 years on the city's north side. Shakib Mansour Khoja now faces 18 total criminal counts, including charges of sexual assault and abuse, kidnapping, and battery. Police say there were five separate incidents occurring between May 2022 and February 2025, but they shared few details about the attacks themselves. They say DNA and video evidence tied the suspect to the attacks. Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke calling Khoja a violent serial predator. Police note the lengthy gap between some of the alleged attacks means they aren't sure if there are other victims. And CPD has also outlined their three-year strategy for operational excellence. Superintendent Larry Snelling explained in a video on social media.
By building these foundations, we can ensure long-term success in fulfilling our mission. Through the strategy for organizational excellence, we are facilitating a stronger future for CPD for generations to come.
Police say the four foundations of that strategic plan include developing their workforce, community trust, neighborhood safety, and organizational infrastructure. Consent decree monitor Maggie Hickey's office is holding a virtual public hearing tomorrow afternoon on the plan. Aircraft manufacturing giant Boeing has reached a settlement with the families of two people killed in a 2019 crash that killed 155 others. Jury selection was set to begin today in a federal courtroom in Chicago in a civil trial against the company. Attorneys for plaintiffs Antoine Lewis and Darcy Bellinger announced a confidential settlement happened last night. Lewis was a 39-year-old Army captain from the Chicago suburbs who leaves behind a wife and two sons. 46-year-old Bellinger of Colorado was the founder of an environmental nonprofit and leaves behind a wife. Boeing is facing more civil trials from other family members and a criminal trial scheduled for June 23rd. And we should note, one of the law firms representing the families, Clifford Law Offices, is a supporter of WTTW. A new face is coming to Chicago's City Council.
My name is Anthony Joel Quesada, and I'm honored and humbled to accept the appointment to serve as alderman of Chicago's 35th Ward.
Anthony Quesada will represent communities like Logan Square, Hermosa, and Irving Park in the 35th Ward. He replaces Carlos Ramirez Rosa, who now heads the Chicago Park District. City Council voted today to confirm the 29-year-old alder person who has some controversy following him. In 2014, when Quesada was in high school, he posted an anti-black slur on social media, which was deleted 2 years ago. He has since apologized, saying the post does not reflect his values or character. Quesada will have the option to run for a full term in 2027. Up next, how the latest round of tariffs are impacting local businesses and residents.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Consumers are starting to stock up on everyday goods again, but this time it's not due to a health pandemic. President Donald Trump's 10% blanket tariffs officially began Friday. He says they're necessary to strengthen the country's global economic position. But economists and business owners warn of the uncertainty a trade war could bring to everyone's wallets. Joining us now with more are Jack Lavin, president and CEO of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Tyler McCall, co-owner of Paper and Pencil, a stationery store in the Andersonville neighborhood, And on Zoom, Stephen Durloff, a professor of economics at the University of Chicago. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us. Professor, I want to start with you. What is, or what would you say, is the president's intention with these tariffs?
Well, the intention is to bring jobs back from the rest of the world and to stimulate the American economy. But there's really no reason to believe that these intentions are going to be met by the policies.
That was my next question. You know, there's that 10% baseline tax on imports on all countries that we mentioned, higher on dozens of nations. Could his actions have the intended effect, or what might the unintended effect actually be?
Well, I think the likely effects, and this is certainly the consensus of economists, liberal or conservative, as well as people in the business, many people in the business community, is this is going to both raise prices and so be an inflation shock, and also potentially cause a recession in the United States. In other words, unemployment could go from some, which is currently 4.2%, to maybe over 5%, and as a result, we'll be in a recession.
Jack Levin, you represent members of the business community. What is your reaction to these tariffs?
Yeah, I think we feel that imposing blanket tariffs is not the way to go. It was poorly planned and disorganized. It's going to raise the costs for businesses. It's going to drive up costs for consumers. It's going to impact the supply chains for our businesses. Whether, you know, we have 15% of our economy is manufacturing, all the supply chains. Parts go back and forth across borders. That's going to be impacted. And for Illinois, I mean, we're one of the top exporting states in the nation. We're number four in the nation, number one in the Midwest. Our exports support over 800,000 jobs. Our foreign direct investment, we're seventh in the nation, and we have almost 400,000 jobs that are impacted by that. So it will have a significant impact on our economy. Businesses like stability. This has created a lot of instability, and we're a consumer-driven economy. And as the professor said, it's going to raise costs, not just for consumers, but for businesses of all sizes in all sectors.
And because this is the context in which we keep talking about tariffs, right? Give me an example, or is there one that comes to mind where there is a tariff that has a positive intended consequence?
Well, there's been the discussion over the years about China and what kind of tariffs they have and intellectual property. And certainly we need to make sure that other countries are not imposing tariffs on ours that are unfair. We like free trade. Maybe we can get to fair trade. But, you know, we don't like those tariffs or other kinds of stealing of intellectual property. So we need to focus on those things. Doing this across-the-board tariff on all countries, all sectors, is not the right way to go, because there's not a problem in every area. There's problems in certain areas. So we should focus on those, focus on growth policies, focus on driving innovation, focus on our workforce, which is our number one asset, but not this blanket across the board. Let's focus on areas where we have issues with tariffs.
Tyler McCall, you and your husband, you are your workforce, because the two of you run a stationery shop in Andersonville. What can tariffs like this mean for your business?
Yeah, right now for us, it means a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. And it also means that we are rethinking what this year may look like in our business. We'll be celebrating our second birthday of our shop coming up next month. And things have been great so far. Our customers have been enjoying the shop. We've been able to grow, expand our product line, grow our team. We just hired our third employee recently. So those are really exciting things that are happening for us. But it leaves us concerned about what the future may hold for our shop. Will we be able to expand? Will we be able to bring in new product lines? Would we ever be able to grow the shop? Will we be able to maintain the team that we have? Are all those questions that we're asking ourselves.
Have you already seen the impact of these tariffs at your shop?
We have, yes. So a great example, I have a brand that we've been shopping with for over 2 years from Paris. We recently brought in an order, a $2,700 order of products. We received that order in early February. We then received a bill for over $1,300 in tariffs in late March for that order, because this brand manufactures most of their products in China. They're designed in Paris and made in China. That bill could really derail a lot of independent businesses, especially during the winter, during slower weeks or slower months. The most frustrating part is we had these products on our shelves for over a month before we received this bill for the tariffs, because we're the little guys. We don't have a broker. We don't have the ability to negotiate rates. We are waiting for the shipper to send us the package, then to send us the bill. And then we have to pay that bill within about a week, or we start accruing 10% interest on that tariff bill. So that's a really great example of something that's happening in real time in our business.
And that can stack up pretty quickly, yes, on a small business owner. Professor, we talked about various kinds of impacts. What might the impact be on jobs of these tariffs?
Well, I think the impact is going to be negative. There's going to be winners and losers, but the evidence again and again throughout history is that tariffs hurt economic growth, and the winners will be swamped by the losers. A good example is the steel tariffs in the first Trump administration. They did increase the number of people who were employed as steel workers. But overall, they had an order of magnitude greater harm to manufacturing jobs because of the role of steel as a productive input. So there's a good reason that these are known as beggar-thy-neighbor policies. They hurt other countries. There's going to be retaliation to hurt us. And they collectively make economies less efficient. Now, as was noted, one can have objections to specific trading policies of specific countries, but those are really fifth order in terms of understanding American economic growth.
We also, I guess we've kind of talked about people with lower incomes and how they might be impacted differently from folks with higher incomes.
Well, it's a very important point. They'll be impacted differently for two reasons. One of them is the fluctuations in unemployment are not going to affect people at the top of the income distribution. It's going to affect people who are in jobs that are very sensitive to demand and to the costs of things such as the steel, et cetera. And the second thing is that these are really regressive taxes. It's a misnomer to use tariffs. They're an import tax. And if you ask the question of who's going to be harmed by that, the higher your income is, the more likely your saving part, the greater your savings are. And so, in some sense, almost as an accounting identity, you're less affected. Also, the capacity to substitute out for people in higher income levels is going to be greater than people that are comparatively disadvantaged. So it's a very regressive tax, and you combine that with the employment effects, and it's really going to hurt the less affluent in this society.
Jack Lavin, what do we know about how consumers are reacting to this and the impact it's having on the mindsets of consumers?
Well, the mindset of consumers, you just heard Tyler, a small business in Andersonville, a neighborhood in Chicago, and he's already seeing the impact, and consumers are pulling back. We see it with businesses and consumers. We start hearing them, the cloud is hanging over the horizon. We're going to pull back. Maybe we aren't going to spend as much money because I don't know what's going to happen in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And if consumers are pulling back, if businesses are pulling back spending, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to lead to less economic activity. I don't want to say the word recession, but less economic activity. A good example is tourism, international tourism. Chicago's been a little slow in coming back from that, but international tourists spend a lot of money, and we're creating this, I'll say, bad will around the world. Canada is an example. They're our number one trading partner. They also have a lot of people come to Chicago, and it looks like maybe, I don't know, some estimates 20% down. That's immediate sales tax revenue, hotel tax revenue that comes to the city and the state, and less people coming here. So it's going to have an immediate impact, medium-term, long-term impact.
Tyler, what are you hearing from customers so far?
So far, our customers have been great as we have discussed this openly with them using our social media channels, chatting with our customers in person. They understand that this is something that is impacting us and that's making us anxious about the future of our shop. So they are continuing to shop with us. We had a great weekend this past weekend. After last week, we talked about this on social media. We talked about this tariff bill that we received. People made a point to come in and support us. My concern is that what happens when everything starts to increase? What happens when all those prices increase? What happens when it may not be as feasible for folks to make that conscious choice to choose to support a local independent shop? Because we're always going to be more than likely more expensive than what you'll find on Amazon or in a big box retailer. So at what point does it become infeasible to keep supporting the local shops?
And that's the problem with this. The way it was rolled out, you have the tariff, it pulled back, the tariff. It creates the instability for a small business owner, for large business owners, for consumers. They don't know what to do, so they're going to pull back, and that hurts the economy.
Professor, we're just about out of time, about 30 seconds. What would you say is the significance of trading as opposed to solely manufacturing our own goods?
Trade is people making decisions that are mutually beneficial. It's a fundamental principle in economics. It's a fundamental principle in life. The effort to bring back jobs here, first of all, it's largely illusory. In other words, these jobs are not going to come back that are frequently discussed. Instead, we're simply going to have higher prices, a less efficient economy, and lower economic growth. Those are not controversial predictions. I guess I would also like to add the importance of distinguishing the harms of tariffs when they're well implemented versus the erratic way, which was mentioned. In other words, when tariffs are proposed, tariffs are withdrawn, tariffs are used as sticks to bully people, when justifications are given that are transparently incorrect, such as claiming that the numbers that were presented were retaliatory, that just adds to uncertainty, and that's exactly what can cause economic decline.
All right. An unclear outlook, it sounds like, but it sounds like you all have a pretty clear picture of what this could be. We'll probably be talking about it again. Until then, I'm going to leave it there with Professor Stephen Dirloff, Jack Lavin, and Tyler McCall. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you, Brandis.
Thank you.
Up next, how local libraries are faring following federal funding cuts. Stay with us. The Institute of Museum and Library Services, or IMLS, provides federal funding to museums and libraries across the country. That funding is currently in limbo. Last month, President Donald Trump signed an executive order to dismantle the agency, resulting in the entire staff being placed on administrative leave. Some say this move could result in the loss of critical programs and services in every state, especially in rural areas. Joining us on Zoom with more are John Fisher, director of Normal Public Library, and Cindy Hull, president of the American Library Association. Thanks to you both for joining us. Cindy Hull, let's start with you. Please give us, you know, sort of a wraparound. What other services do libraries provide that could be at risk as a result of this executive order?
Well, libraries provide a wealth of resources to their local community, especially in rural and small areas where residents may not be able to afford access to the internet in their home. So they come to the library to check their email, to apply for jobs and benefits, to update their resume, to write a paper. There are so many different uses for the internet, and this is one way that libraries bridge the digital divide, along with providing services to senior citizens in homes, those who are homebound or have low vision, and they need these materials delivered to them. With 125,000 libraries in the U.S., there are no two that are the same, and we all serve our communities in unique ways. Providing literacy-based programs and making sure that everyone has access to the information that they need to live their best lives.
John, the IMLS offers $5.7 million a year to more than 200 libraries in Illinois alone. A portion of that funding could impact the library delivery system called Rails. Tell us about that and how it will impact your branch.
So thank you, Brandis. This is one system in Illinois that serves over 27,000 square miles of delivery space. And these items, it's more than just books. These can be rare videos, rare audio recordings, or popular materials. And they're transported from library to library so that we can share in the resources that each community owns. If this delivery goes away, it will hurt local libraries right here. We have community members that use this delivery service every single day. We estimate over 40,000 items roll through our doors for our community residents that come through the Rails delivery, so it will hurt us hard.
Cindy, just today, the ALA, you all released your annual State of American Libraries report showing more than 70% of attempted book bans come from organized groups and elected officials, compared to 16% originating with parents. What does that tell you?
Shows that the behavior continues with these organized groups, and perhaps they're not even library users or readers for that matter. It's concerning because we have to use library resources, and that means local tax dollars. When library staff go through the process of moving through a materials challenge, we have to read the books. We have to get a committee together. We have to evaluate the material and write a report. You know, that takes time and resources. And so if we're hearing that 5% are actually individuals and 16% are parents, that leads a whole bunch of people down this trail thinking that this is a true problem, when in reality, it's organized groups that are targeting libraries unfairly.
Part of the release annual report, you all also included your 10 most challenged books, as you usually do. This is of 2024, including George M. Johnson's All Boys Aren't Blue and The Bluest Eye by the late author Toni Morrison. Cindy, what are you all noticing about the intent behind calling out these books or books like these?
Since 2022, really, we've seen that the behavior continues to target characters or even authors who are Black, Indigenous, people of color, or those storylines from the LGBTQIA plus community. And so when you see that there's a rather new author, but then Toni Morrison's also on there, you know, Toni's work has been challenged for decades. So this isn't new activity. It just happens to be the latest wave of activity regarding attempted censorship in America.
According to the National Literacy Institute, in 2024, 21% of adults in the U.S. are illiterate. 54% of adults have a literacy below sixth grade level. John, how could dismantling the IMLS impact literacy rates and the work that libraries do in increasing those?
Well, I think because the research that goes into literacy rates and how we can aid in correcting literacy rates in our own communities is threatened by a lack of IMLS funds. And this is really important on the local level. You know, as Cindy mentioned, libraries support seniors, people with disabilities, children, parents struggling to make ends meet, veterans, job seekers, people experiencing homelessness, and everyone that comes to the library is using a service, a collection, or attending an event that makes a difference in their life. And literacy, along with all of those, is just as important to the librarians that are supporting their communities and trying their best to make a thriving community. I think every community is served by its library, and we really want to have thriving communities served by thriving libraries, and funding is top of mind in terms of making a thriving library.
The Trump administration issued a statement recently saying, quote, President Trump was given a clear mandate by the American people, and his executive order delivers on that by reducing federal bureaucracy. This restructure is a necessary step to fulfill that order and ensure hard-earned tax dollars are not diverted to discriminatory DEI initiatives or divisive anti-American programming in our cultural institutions. These changes will strengthen IMLS's ability to serve the American people with integrity and purpose. Cindy, how do you respond to that statement?
Libraries are for everyone, and we provide everyone with equal access to information and ideas. So when we hear that this is 0.003% of the federal budget, that allocates to 75 cents per American. I don't know how we could consider that to be wasteful, especially when we're bridging so many divides and meeting so many unmet needs in our communities. Libraries are for readers, and we are going to do our very best to keep doors open and make sure that libraries aren't closed, especially in small and rural areas where the library might be the only free and open community space available to people. And when Cindy, we're talking about diversity, that is the strength of this great nation. When we talk about equity, that means every American. And when we talk about inclusion, that also means everyone who lives here.
And Cindy, briefly, what recourse is there for restoring IMLS funding?
Well, you know, this executive order could be stopped or limited by Congress enacting a law that overrides the president's action. A court could also overturn the provision of the executive order, actions taken to implement that executive order, or find it in violation of the Constitution. And President Trump or a future president could also rescind or modify the executive order.
Okay, John, we've got about 25 seconds. How would you say American libraries have helped to shape the identity of the country?
You know, I think it goes back to a lot of what Cindy just said. You know, reading and literacy is very important to the local communities. People come in for all sorts of reasons, and we want to support the growth of our communities so that they can live the life that they're dreaming to live, and we're looking to help them succeed.
And that's where, thank you so much. That's where we'll have to leave it. My thanks to Cindy Hole and John Fisher.
Yeah, thank you, Brandis.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Monday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm serving Chicago for 37 years.